Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we'll discuss the Minnesota National Guard's Junior Diversity Program, get an update on from our Gold Star families, and visit with the Command Sergeant Major. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
October 13th is the Navy's birthday. On that day, in 1775, the Continental Congress passed legislation authorizing the construction and purchase of America's first Navy ships. Every year, men and women aboard ships around the world witness a Navy-wide bell ringing. The ceremonial objective is to instill in the sailors and remind the public the importance of and the sense of pride in the Navy's history and heritage. The Navy has an age-old practice of sounding the bell during the watches on the hour and half hour. This symbolic hallmark effort is as appropriate in today's nuclear and missile-oriented Navy than it ever was. From their historic sailing vessels in the late 18th century to every command today, bell ringing signals that someone stands the watch. Bell ringing serves as a powerful and tangible reminder of the history, heritage, and accomplishments of the Navy and an enduring tradition of the Navy birthday celebration. To the proud men and women who serve in our United States Navy, congratulations to you and your proud naval history.
Thank you, General Nash. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. As I said during the introduction, today we're going to talk about the Minnesota National Guard's Junior Diversity Council. And this is where Major General Nash has directed a Junior Diversity Council to meet with junior soldiers and provide them with unfiltered access to discuss diversity and inclusion efforts that he can affect at his level. The goal is to provide a valid measure of effectiveness within the Minnesota National Guard. And the focal question for the group was, what can the Adjutant General do to prepare you and this organization for the next 10 to 15 years? And joining us now to talk about that is Lieutenant Colonel Jeff Merricks. Colonel Merricks, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Good morning, Tom.
Colonel, can you tell us how long you've been in the military?
Well, I've been in for 27 years, both traditional and full-time. And on the full-time side, I've been in for 16, so 27 total time years.
And Colonel, your position's with the Guard, you'll have a full-time position and then a weekend position?
Yes, sir. My full-time job, I'm the Director of Diversity and Inclusion for the National Guard. And on the traditional side, I'm a battalion commander for the 834th Aviation Support Battalion.
Now, Colonel, we've heard the Adjutant General talk about diversity in the force many times over the last 6 years, and he's been in and told us that one of his goals is that he wants the population of Minnesota to match the population of his soldiers and airmen that are in the Army and Air National Guard. And I think he's made a lot of progress on that in the last 6 years. And you're one of the people charged with that effort, aren't you?
Yes, sir. As you just said, over the last 6 years, the Minnesota National Guard with General Nash's influence has really been to double. He's doubled the diversity of the force over his tenure so far.
So what does that mean in terms that my listeners can understand?
Okay. So about 2011, we had about 7.5% of the Minnesota National Guard was diverse, whether they're race, ethnic, or gender. And then as of today, we're at over 15.5%. So he has doubled the race ethnic of the Minnesota National Guard.
Yeah. And I would guess he's done a lot of that with the help of the recruiting and recruiting command and told them, no, listen, let's make sure that we get people from all walks of life and from all races and ethnic backgrounds, and let's give equal opportunity to everyone.
Yep, that's exactly right. The recruiting command for both the Air and the Army have been phenomenal in getting these in here. And this council is how are we going to keep the diverse soldiers and the rest of the soldiers in the Minnesota National Guard. And that's one of the primary goals of this council, is for the inclusion aspect. Once we're here, how do we keep them?
So Major General Nash, who is the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, did he create the Junior Diversity Council? Did that come on his watch?
Yes, sir. Yeah, about last January or so, a little bit before, he basically looked at me and said, I want to have a Junior Diversity Council. So in January, we started that up, and in March was our first meeting.
So I'm sure you said, sir, yes, sir, and just what do you mean by Junior Diversity Council? What is that, sir?
Okay, that Junior Diversity, yeah, I did say, sir, yes, sir. The Junior Diversity Council is soldiers and airmen for on the rank of E4 and below and lieutenants and below. Those are the people that make up the Junior Council.
So you wanted to gather up from across the Army and Air National Guard some of the junior people. Bring them together in a group for what purpose?
So the purpose for that group was solely to be for him to be able to ensure his ideals and his policies were making it down through all levels, from the seniors to the mid-grade to the junior levels of the National Guard. And he wanted that bottom-up feedback to make sure, like you said in the opening remarks, that they had unfiltered access to the decision-maker, which was him.
So we've observed over the last 6 years that the Adjutant General and his officers get together and they decide on where they need to go and what their budgets are and what they need to do and what the mission is. And then we've had a lot of Sergeants Major in here that help those officers disseminate that information to the NCO ranks and the enlisted ranks. And this was just another method by which we could go around that and go down to the lower ranks and say, okay, here's what we're trying to do. What are you seeing? And what are you seeing that maybe we're not doing?
Exactly. And that's the innovative aspect of this whole council, is that we do have a chain of command, and it's not necessarily to usurp the chain of command. We're still using, exactly what we said, sending it to the commanders and the sergeant majors. But really, again, to get that feedback coming from the bottom back up. Because as the general talked at the last council, there's insider groups and there's outsider groups. And the tendency is that the senior leaders, they have all the power, but they don't necessarily have the knowledge to make the change, what needs to be changed. Whereas the junior individuals, they have all the knowledge on how to make change in the organization, but they don't necessarily have the power to make those changes. And so General wanted to make sure that we tie those things together.
We're speaking with Lieutenant Colonel Jeff Merricks about the Junior Diversity Council of the Minnesota National Guard on Minnesota Military Radio. Now, Colonel, to put those in other words, the TAG and his group of top officers are always dealing with the edicts that come out of the Pentagon and the things they have to do here in the state for the state mission. And then you've got your commanders and your sergeant majors and all the rest of them. But on the bottom end, they've got jobs to do. And they're the E4s and below, they're doing their job and they're taking care of these things. And they're not necessarily thinking about what are we doing tomorrow, what are we doing next month, what are we doing 10 years from now. But the Adjutant General is trying to get that information out to all the troops. So this is a way that he can check and say, okay, how are you doing? What are you hearing? Are you getting the messages? What can we do it better?
Exactly. That's exactly it, Tom.
So can you tell me, we've just got a couple of minutes before we have to take a break. What can you give me a little more on the makeup of the Junior Diversity Council in terms of airmen and soldiers and how many people?
Yep. There's 22 members comprised of airmen and soldiers. The way we started it off was basically two individuals from each major subordinate command, which was basically an 06 level command. So we have two from the 148th, two from the 133rd Air Wings, and then a multiple. The rest remain our Army soldiers from the throughout the 34th Infantry Division and Joint Force Headquarters.
Okay, so you've got some from the headquarters and some from division, and try to break them up and get them from different spots.
Yep. So all major subordinate commands are representative. So we're taking a sampling throughout the whole state.
And how often does the Junior Diversity Council meet?
We meet quarterly. So once a quarter, we're having our next meeting this Saturday on the October 15th.
So it's these 22 that were picked, and who else is there at those meetings?
The only people there are myself and General Nash. So the whole point of the meeting, again, was for them to have build that relationship with the general and to have it non-attributional. So we're building that relationship so they can speak freely on that quarterly to be able to get right to the issue, so they're not worried about what sergeant majors or anybody else are going to be thinking of how they're responding.
So get them comfortable when they're there.
Absolutely.
And how many times have you met now?
We've met twice. This will be our third meeting.
So did they open up a little more in the second meeting than they did in the first?
Absolutely. It's definitely getting better.
Had to be a little doubt at that first one. Now, here's what we're supposed to do, but if I open my mouth, what kind of trouble am I going to get into?
Exactly. And it was awkward when General Nash kicked the public affairs or his aide out on that first meeting, because General always has his aide with him, and he looked at him and said, "Eric, this ain't for you, and we'll see you tomorrow."
Well, he started it out right then, didn't he?
That's right.
Colonel, we have to take a short break. When we come back, we want to meet a couple of the members of the Junior Diversity Council. They're here with us in the studio. So we're going to take a short break. We'll be back with Colonel Jeff Merrick and to talk about the Junior Diversity Council of the Minnesota National Guard in just a moment. Please stay with us. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been talking to Lieutenant Colonel Jeff Merrick's about the Junior Diversity Council, which was a creation of the Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash, and it's an attempt to get some direct feedback from some of the lower ranks across the Army and Air National Guard directly to himself and to Colonel Merrick's as kind of a test to see if the information is getting from the top down and make sure it gets from it goes the other way too, right?
That's right.
So, once again, this is a quarterly meeting where you bring in 22 junior NCOs, and you've had a couple of these already.
Yep.
And the third one's coming up pretty quick?
Yes, sir. It's this Saturday on the 15th.
And how long do they last? A couple hours. So it's direct access to the boss.
It's 2 hours of direct access from the E4s and below to the Adjutant General of Minnesota. That's a big feat. There's other leaders inside the organization that don't get that access.
Well, and I've known General Nash for 6 years now, and it doesn't surprise me that he wants to do this and to learn from this. And you've brought a couple of your soldiers that are on the Junior Diversity Council with you. Would you introduce them, please?
Absolutely, Tom. So in the studio today, I have Specialist Esbon Kabogo. And he's with the 34th Infantry Division Red Bulls, representing their headquarters section. And Specialist Sidney Howell, who's with the Joint Force Headquarters.
Specialists, both of you, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, Tom. This is good to be here.
Good to be here, too. Sir.
Specialist Kibogo, we're going to talk to you first. Now, you're over at the division. What's your position over there?
I work in the commander group, and me being a specialist, I just help around the commander group.
The command group over at Division?
Yes, in Alpha Company.
Okay. And do you know, how did you get chosen to be on the Junior Diversity Council?
It wasn't random, and they thought that the low enlisted, so I'm among those who are low enlisted in the command, so they thought I could fit in that position, sir.
And when you went to that first meeting, how did you feel about that?
I was really nervous about it because it's rare to find that such opportunity to be with the general for 2 hours, uninterrupted time, just one-on-one. It feels good, but it's kind of nervous too, sir.
Had you ever had a one-on-one discussion with the Adjutant General?
Never. That was the first time, sir.
So the first time was pretty nervous. Now, you had a second one. Was that a little easier, a little better?
Yeah, it started getting real, and it's making me feel better about me being the Army and me being the National Guard and me being a soldier in Minnesota, too, because then I feel included in the group.
So you're getting a little more comfortable talking directly to the big boss.
That's true, sir.
Have you given him any suggestions yet?
I've given a few, yes, sir. Such as our last meeting, I remember we talked about getting to the community and getting small youths involved in different ethnic groups and just making them feel that we are included in as a community,
And, so reaching out to the community and getting some of the children, some of the youth. To meet some of our Minnesota National Guard soldiers and airmen and get comfortable with the fact that this might be a good career sometime.
And closing that gap that is between the high enlisted and the low enlisted, too.
All right. And the general's helping you with that?
Yes, sir.
All right. And Specialist Howell, how'd you feel about that? Where do you work first?
I work in the public affairs office with Joint Force Headquarters, so I'm a videographer for them.
So you work for Colonel Olson?
I do.
All right. We got a plant in the studio, Colonel. I don't know about this one.
Sorry about that.
So you're comfortable behind the microphone then, aren't you?
Fairly comfortable, yes, sir.
How did you feel at that first meeting with the Junior Diversity Council?
You know, I wasn't totally sure what to expect. I just heard that we were supposed to show up and the general's going to come talk to us and hear some of our thoughts. And I was like, I don't have any thoughts to share. But it was great. He just opened up and said, don't worry about serving me or anything like that. I just want to hear you guys' thoughts and how you think the guard is treating you and your ethnic groups or your gender groups and how you are getting information from your sergeants and your command. So.
Now, I would guess as being part of the public affairs that you'd probably met General Nash prior to that first meeting.
I had, yes. I don't know if I had talked to him personally, but I had been in groups with him and set up cameras to film him and stuff like that. So
you were probably a little more comfortable at that first meeting?
Probably than most of them, yes.
So how does this work? Does the general go around the table and ask everybody questions, or does he ask for suggestions, or both?
I think he opens typically with a topic or a question, and whenever anybody in the group feels compelled to answer, they'll usually kind of try and input their own kind of experiences that they've had and how that might made them feel and what they think should be done to improve the situation.
Now, I know General Nash. I've talked to him hundreds of times in the last 6 years. My guess is if there's somebody on the council that's not speaking up, that he's probably going to direct a question right at them to get an answer. Is that true?
You know, he's been pretty kind to all of us. We some people don't feel as comfortable as others, or they don't have as much experience to share. So he's been pretty lenient on that, but he definitely does want to hear every person's opinion and experience. So he does try and gently draw out those answers from everyone.
Gently.
Gently. Would.
Now, what was your view of the second meeting? Was it a little more give and take?
Yeah, you know, the second meeting, people were a lot more comfortable. I think they knew more of what to expect and that, you know, this was a really friendly environment. And, you know, we had some tears in the first one, and it was just because people were so thankful to be able to have this opportunity to share their personal experiences and stuff. So I think it kind of bonded us with that emotional, being able to share that emotion with everyone in the group.
Now you've got your third meeting coming up. Are you loaded with some questions for the general?
Some. I definitely want to hear more about how other people, I think we left with some questions of to take back to our other junior enlisted in our organizations and departments in the National Guard. So I'm curious to hear what other people, the feedback they got from their fellow soldiers and stuff, and be able to present that. So
you're collectively bringing back some feedback on some of his items that he wants some more information on.
Yes, that's correct.
So back to you, Specialist Kibogo. Have you got some special questions or information you're going to give to the general this coming up meeting?
Yes, I do. I have a few, like, are we going to make sure that the coming generation knows that it's not a big deal to be a service member and to be a civilian?
And so they know that everyone's welcome in the Minnesota National Guard.
Correct.
So. And you've all got the equal opportunity to move up and go as high as you can.
And if we find all those measures put in place, then I think that will work.
And you're believing that that's all true, right?
Yes, sir.
That's great. Because the next time I see you, I hope you've got two or three more stripes.
Yeah, you bet.
Well, thanks for both of you for joining us. Colonel, we just got a couple of minutes left. After two meetings, the third one coming up, how's it working? Is the general happy with the progress?
Yeah, the general's really happy, or at least he hasn't told me. He's I still have a job, so I'm going to take that as a go.
That's a good sign.
No, it's very productive, and the two specialists here, they're going to get a preview of it. But this next meeting, we're going to do a little bit different. We're going to have our topic, and then we're going to break up into smaller groups and have them do a little brainstorming on some actionable items that we can push on down to the rest of the commanders on how we can really go after some specific problems, like communication or social media. How are different ways that we can actually communicate to our specialists?
So you're going to present them with some questions and ask them, what do you think is the best way to solve this?
Right, as opposed to us trying to figure out what the best way to reach our younger generation.
Now, I'm sure you and General Nash have talked about this, but what kind of an impact do you think that this Junior Diversity Council is going to have on the Minnesota National Guard today and 10 years from now?
I think it's going to have a phenomenal impact. You're already seeing it. I think Specialist Kabogo talked about it earlier, was saying that you know, people just can't believe that they're part of it. You know, that they can't believe that they're actually going to this meeting. And the more we get that information out to all the soldiers inside of the Minnesota National Guard, the more relationship, the more trust is going to be built with our senior leaders, that diversifying and inclusion of our forces and all the personnel in the air and the Army, that's a real thing. And it has a priority from the Adjutant General, from all the other leaders inside the organization.
Well, Colonel, I'm excited about this Junior Diversity Council, and I hope you'll be able to come back and visit with us next year and tell us how it's working and some of the things that it might have produced.
Absolutely, Tom. It's a great thing, and I know it's going to be some good outcomes for next year.
Thank all of you for joining me today on Minnesota Military Radio. That was Lieutenant Colonel Jeff Merricks, along with two members of General Nash's Junior Diversity Council, Specialist Izboni Kibogo and Specialist Sidney Howell on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Today's Yellow Ribbon Company Spotlight is UPS. UPS is the world's largest package delivery company and one of the leading global providers of specialized transportation and logistics services. UPS has seen firsthand the value in hiring skilled veteran leaders into their workforce. They have made a national commitment to hire 50,000 veterans and to devote 50,000 volunteer hours towards military support efforts in the local communities in which they serve. At UPS, they believe in offering the men and women who have served their country more than a job. They want to give them an opportunity to live up to their potential while building a satisfying career. UPS has been a Yellow Ribbon Company since July of 2016 and is honored and proud to be making a difference to service members, veterans, and their families. Well, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we're going to get an update on our Gold Star family programs here in Minnesota. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now, here's Commissioner Larry Shelleteau.
As Minnesotans, hunting is embedded in our culture. Families, friends, and colleagues take part in hunting together, making memories that last a lifetime. Each year, organizations across the state of Minnesota provide disabled veterans with the opportunity to hunt. As Minnesotans, many of us share the common bond of fishing and hunting. For many service members, it's the sounds, the smells, and the memories of the great outdoors that bring them back to Minnesota when they are away serving their country. Events like this connect our state's heroes with the best hunting guides while providing a therapeutic environment to heal in the outdoors. After all, it's because of the sacrifices of our service members and the veterans that we are able to do the things we enjoy most in the great outdoors. Thank you to the individuals, veteran service organizations, and private companies for giving our veterans these wonderful opportunities.
Thank you, Commissioner Shelleteau. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now is the coordinator of the Gold Star Family and Women's Veterans Program from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, Ashley Langenier. Ashley, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks, Tom.
Ashley, I understand that you were on leave for a little while. You had an important addition to your family.
I did. I had a baby boy in March.
And everybody's healthy.
Absolutely. I actually had him on my birthday.
Oh, well, you're going to celebrate birthdays together for a long time.
Yeah, forever, yes.
Now, for our listeners that don't remember, you were a member of the Army National Guard.
I was, yes. From 2002 to 2006.
And how did you get to the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs?
After my military service ended, I suffered an injury early on in my career, and that ended pretty quickly. I went to college, and I worked for over 5 years with the United States Department of Veterans Affairs in compensation as a veteran service representative there.
That should have been good training and experience.
It absolutely was. I really enjoyed it, but I really wanted to work one-on-one with my veterans and their families and be more of an advocate. So in 2014, I took the Gold Star Family and Women Veterans Coordinator position with MDVA, and it's been an amazing transfer, and I love it.
Well, I'm glad you're in that spot because I know you're working hard. I've been watching.
Absolutely.
Can you explain to our listeners what is the MDVA's Gold Star Family Program all
Definitely.
About?
Definitely. So initiated during World War I, the title Gold Star distinguishes a family member who lost a loved one in military service. Today, immediate family members, which include parents, siblings, spouse, or children, receive a Gold Star from the Department of Defense to honor those who made the ultimate sacrifice. The MDVA Gold Star Family Program supports families of these service members as they heal from their loss. Our goal is to honor the legacy of every fallen Minnesota hero while supporting the needs of their families. This is accomplished by a unique set of Gold Star Family Services that include support, benefits, and resources.
Ashley, I think when I first met you, the focus was on the more recent Gold Star families from 2001 to today, mm-hmm. and providing support for those who have recently lost loved ones in
Correct.
Service to their country. But I know that you've tried to open that up to include Gold Star families from every era.
That is correct. I feel it's important to remember that there's no expiration date on our duty to honor those who have lost a loved one in military service. Gold Star family members of all eras are eligible for our services and to attend any events held in their honor.
So I know we've been at a couple of events. There were Gold Star family weekends up at Cragans.
Mm-hmm.
We were up there a couple of times and put together a show that was played July 4th, I think, 2 years ago. We got interviews from 8 Gold Star families. And that podcast is at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Just put in Gold Star Families. You'll see it. Listening to those interviews was very enlightening. Our Gold Star families want to remember and they want to talk about those they've lost, don't they?
Absolutely. And I think these events are great opportunities for families to connect, share their stories with those who have had similar experiences, and just be surrounded by those who understand.
And the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs is there to help those Gold Star families in any way they can, really.
Definitely. Whether it's, you know, providing resources, assisting with VA benefits they may be eligible for, connecting them to counseling or support groups, or just holding events and connecting families with each other, that's really provides a sense of connection that's found to be more healing than anything else we can ever provide.
Ashley, I discovered you had me up there a couple of years ago and I gave the opening speech. Of course, I had to go first.
Yep.
Thanks a lot. But when I was introducing myself to the audience, I was trying to tell them that my grandfather came here from Ireland about 103 or 4 years ago. And in that time, we've lost several family members in service to our country, including my father, who was wounded in World War II and ultimately succumbed to those. His brother died. He was a door gunner in a B-17 over Austria. My older brother was a couple of tours in Vietnam in the Marine Corps, and we lost him. But I never considered myself a Gold Star person or part of a Gold Star family, because this is just part of who we are and what we did. And a lot of families have multiple generations that have served, and a lot of families have lost loved ones in service to their country. But they don't think about being a Gold Star.
Absolutely. I think that's very common, I found. I mean, that's why one of our main goals is to really increase awareness of the program and the eligibility for services and support, always working to connect families with those needs. And I think that's very common for our families to take that loss and to mourn as a family and not realize that there's, you know, others who have gone through the same experience as them. And that's where our service organizations and community members can really step in and provide immense assistance in reaching out to families who may have been unsupported in the past and bringing them into the fold of the Gold Star Family Program so that we can support their needs.
We're speaking to Ashley Lagunier, who's the MDVA's Gold Star Family and Women Veterans Program Coordinator on Minnesota Military Radio. Now, Ashley, I think in the last couple of years, you've had a new event here in town.
Correct. For the past 2 years, we hosted a Gold Star Family Day at Valley Fair, which was actually the brainchild of two amazing Minnesota Gold Star mothers who wanted to remember that even while grieving, it's okay to have fun and laugh. In 2015, that was the first time we hosted that event. It's a great day for families to come together to connect, share a meal, and have some fun. And we continue to hold this event each summer in addition to hopefully hosting a few others throughout the year.
Ashley, I have to ask you this. A lot of our listeners, and I was this way until I was with you a few times. When you meet a Gold Star family, a Gold Star parent, you really don't know what to ask them, but we've learned that they want to talk about their loved one lost, and they want to remember them.
Absolutely.
And so it's, how do you open up a conversation with them about that?
I think, especially with the Gold Star pins that are given to the family members by Department of Defense is, they wear that to show that they have lost a loved one. And if you see someone wearing that pin or a T-shirt maybe in honor, I think it's okay to ask and thank them for their sacrifice and let them know that they're always remembered and hear their story about their loved one.
So you might say, I see you're wearing a Gold Star pin. Would you like to tell me about the loved one you
lost? Absolutely. And let them know they're never forgotten and their sacrifice is never forgotten.
And be prepared for a 5 or 10 minute story.
Absolutely.
Right?
And that's just fine.
And we've learned that when the Gold Star families come together, they get real comfortable because they've mm-hmm. got something in common.
Absolutely.
And they bond.
Absolutely. So they're a Gold Star family within themselves, but as a group, they're an even larger family, and it's very touching to see them together. They're very close. It takes a village to raise a child. They step in and they take care of each other's children, and it's just one large family, and it's just amazing to witness.
And I think it's important for us to remember that in today's day and age, less than 1% of the people in the United States serve in the military. And fortunately, out of those, we don't lose too many, but occasionally we do. Mm-hmm. And it's those people who are out there protecting our freedoms and protecting our way of life and allowing us to do things like we're doing today, talk on the radio, and remember those Gold Star families and the people they lost.
Yeah, definitely.
So you've got a pretty good job over at the NDVA, don't you?
It is it's a huge honor. It's the best job I've ever had.
Now, we've been talking about Gold Star families, but there's another aspect of your job, and that's the Women's Veterans Programs.
That is correct.
Ashley, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I'd like to talk about the special programs for the increasing number of women veterans that we have here today. We're speaking with Ashley Langenier from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been speaking with Ashley Langenier, who she works for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and she is the Gold Star Family and Women Veterans Program Coordinator over there. Ashley, we had a good discussion of the Gold Star Family programs in the prior segment. We're going to move on now to Women's Veterans Programs. What all does that entail at the MDVA?
The mission of the Women Veterans Program for MDVA is to ensure that women veterans have equitable access to federal and state benefits and services. We respond to gender-specific needs of women veterans and ensure that they're treated with dignity and respect. Our outreach events are geared to improve the awareness of available benefits, services, and the eligibility criteria for the women who served in the United States Armed Forces.
So things have changed in the last 15 years since September 11, 2001. More and more women have served, and more women have deployed.
Absolutely.
And therefore, we have more and more women veterans than probably we've ever had.
Definitely. I have been told that women veterans are the fastest growing population of our service members.
And do they feel like they're being well served by the MDVA and the VA Medical Center?
Well, I definitely hope that they feel that they're being well served by MDVA, since that's one of my main goals every day. The VA Medical Center is always improving their women veterans care and coordination. And I know personally myself, I've experienced quite an influx of care from the VA.
Now, you were in the military and you're getting care at the Minneapolis VA Medical Center.
Correct.
And we've had their people on the show quite often, and they've told me that they've expanded the facilities for women veterans, and they're working on, there's some remodeling coming up to expand them even more.
Yes. So I know that every doctor, or most doctors at the VA Medical Center are qualified to care for women veterans, but it's great that they have a women-specific clinic with a private waiting room, if you'd like to utilize that. And you can see doctors that are more specialized in women's health care.
No, I was out there this week, and there's a lot of my buddies out there. There's a lot of beat-up guys out there getting taken care of, and I'm a patient out there, and they take great care of me. Everybody from top to bottom out there has been all right. Is it that good of an experience for the women? Are you comfortable out there?
Personally, I have felt very comfortable.
And they're going out of their way to make sure that they do everything they can for the ladies.
They are.
Now, you just, as we open up the show, you just had a baby boy.
I did.
Did you get care before your baby was born out at the VA?
I did. I was receiving my primary care prior to becoming pregnant at the Minneapolis VA Medical Center. And then they actually helped outsource some infertility care for me, which was very helpful since they can't provide those services there at the hospital. And then once having my son, they continued to provide care. And while I was pregnant, a program I didn't know about was the maternity care, and they provide nursing bras, breast pumps, lanolin nursing pads, prenatal vitamins.
So the only thing they don't do out there is deliver babies.
Correct.
So they had to outsource that.
Yes.
But you said they gave you some gift bags and some information and said, come on back here as soon as you're ready.
Absolutely. I got an amazing gift bag that said I was a warrior mom, and it was filled with all kinds of goodies for myself and my son.
So now you've both been back out there?
Yep. I did bring him back with me to my first primary care appointment after having him. They like to see the babies that they help care for.
I'm sure they do, and they do a great job out there. So
definitely.
The follow-up care out there has been terrific.
It's been great, yes.
Okay, now I think there are women veterans all over Minnesota.
There are.
Probably a little leery to go into the Minneapolis VA Medical Center for their care. What
Possibly.
Would you have to say to them?
You know, there's a lot of community outpatient clinics. I also have utilized the Rochester, what they call CBOX, the community-based outpatient clinics, and they're amazing as well. So definitely receive your care at any VA clinic that's near you.
So for all your women veterans out there, if you're interested in finding out how to get care there, get a hold of Ashley at the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, because she's in charge of women veterans programs, and you're ready, willing, and able to talk to all those ladies, aren't
Absolutely.
You?
Absolutely.
All right, Ashley, we just got about 30 seconds left. Any final thoughts about Gold Star families and women veteran programs?
Just to stay connected, both of our websites, minnesotaveteran.org/goldstar or minnesotaveteran.org/womenveterans.
Ashley, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Tom.
That was Ashley Langenier. From the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, she is the coordinator of the Gold Star Family and Women Veterans Programs. Joining me now is the Senior Enlisted Advisor to the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham. Sergeant Major, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Hi, Tom. Great to be with you again. Thanks so much for having me.
Sergeant Major, thanks for calling in today. I understand we want to talk about a special program today that's called the Support Our Troops Grant Program.
Yes, we sure do. I thought it'd be a great opportunity to just kind of share with some of the listeners a little bit about the program. I imagine that as our listeners and as you have seen driving out and about, you've seen those special license plates on the cars, the Support Our Troops plates. And just like me, oftentimes people might wonder, where does that money go that I pay, you know, $30 a year as a minimum contribution to have those special plates on my car? So I thought I would kind of give a couple of stats and just share how the whole program works.
So, Sergeant Major, it's my understanding that there's about 10 or 12 of these special license plates available in the state of Minnesota, and the Support Our Troops license plates are where you can, if you want to put that special license plate on your vehicle, you can do so at the time that they come up for renewal, and you pay some extra money towards it. And those funds go to the state of Minnesota for some purposes you're going to explain to us today.
Yeah, that's right. When you go to renew your tabs, you have the option to select different special types of plates. And the Support Our Troops is just one of those special ones. In addition to the normal licensing fees, a donation or contribution of $30 is required. And to date, since the program has started back in December of 2005 when they first became available, the program's collected over $4 million. And the great thing about what happens with that money is it does come into the state, and the money's actually split between two agencies. The first agency that gets half of that money goes to our Department of Veterans Affairs, and then the other half goes to our Department of Military Affairs. And for example, the Department of Veterans Affairs, they just published who they gave their grants to and when the grant application process starts. And, of course, people can get more information about those requirements at their MDVA webpage. The Support Our Troops funds that go to the Department of Military Affairs, which is the agency in which I belong, that money comes in, and like I said, it's half of the total amount collected. And what I really want people to understand is regardless of what agency it goes to, the money is being well spent to provide veterans resources. And there's a list of criteria that anybody requesting funds must meet in order to receive those funds for their nonprofit agency. They've got to demonstrate they're providing a veteran service. They've got to demonstrate that there's an outcome with the money, so we're just not giving money to someone to provide a service that's not going to be a benefit to our military members. And the nice thing is this isn't a National Guard program. I know that You know, I'm a member of the Minnesota Guard here, and a lot of our guests come on and are members of the Minnesota Guard. But this program is available, and it provides services to any person who has ever served in the military, is a veteran of the military, and even people that are serving outside of the state of Minnesota that were members of or residents of Minnesota, they're still eligible to receive these same types of benefits.
So those Support Our Troops funds are available to take care of our service members, our veterans, and their families.
That is exactly correct. And it's, you know, they're pretty strict guidelines that have to be followed in order to get the funds. But again, it's all about what services are being provided to our veterans. How are they helping out current members, past members, and, of course, their immediate family members?
So if our listeners want to find out more, they can go either to the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs website or the Minnesota Department of Military Affairs website.
Military Affairs, absolutely right. And the application process is clearly laid out. The requirements are clearly laid out. And those applications, I know on the Department of Veterans Affairs, that board meets annually. And then up at the Department of Military Affairs, that board meets basically kind of as needed, but generally about three times or four times a year to vote on all of the packets that come in.
So for all our listeners out there, if you want to help support our veterans, our service members, and their families in Minnesota, think about getting a Support Our Troops license plate the next time we renew. Sergeant Major, thanks for joining us again today.
Yes. Hey, Tom, again, thank you so much, and I appreciate everybody's support with this program, and rest assured that the money that is collected is going to provide great resources to our veterans, our service members in all branches of the military as well, and their families.
Thank you, Sergeant Major.
Have a wonderful day, Tom. Thank you.
That was the Senior Enlisted Advisor, the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham. We have two mentions today. First, Congressman Tom Emmer will be holding a Veterans Resource Fair on October 15th. This event is to assist the brave men and women who serve this great nation with access to job and educational opportunities, help with their resumes, housing needs, as well as health and VA assistance. The Veterans Resource Fair will be located at the Monticello High School from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Saturday, October 15th. Information available at emmer.house.gov/services/veterans-resource-fair. I'm sure if you just go to emmer.house.gov, you can find the links to that. And the last, there are over 2,400 military service members still eligible to claim the 2012 military credit. This credit is for military service in a combat zone for service in 2012 and will expire for most qualifying service members on October 15th this year, 2016. The credit is for 2012 is $120 per month or partial month served. You have to file Form 99, Credit for Military Service in a Combat Zone. For more information on that, go to revenue.state.mn.us. Applications must be postmarked by October 15th, 2016. We're just about out of time. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Lieutenant Colonel Jeff Merricks, Specialist Isbone Kibogo, and Specialist Sidney Howell, Ashley Langenier, Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham, Commissioner Larry Shelado of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week as we interview another Minneapolis VA healthcare system doctor and meet our latest Yellow Ribbon company. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.